I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. I mean it when I say that the American experiment is quite literally on the line. Plus, Washington's Attorney General Nick Brown introduces the most hypocritical bill of all time. And a proposed bill is in response to our exclusive whistleblower report on fraud within the Community Reinvestment Program. We'll talk about what that bill would do and why it should be non-controversial. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Our apologies for canceling yesterday's live show. I have a dog that had surgery, as you know, not the end of the world. But as a result, I got literally no sleep Sunday night, not one single minute. And I start to go to come in and I'm falling asleep standing up. And I thought I'm not going to be able to give them my best or even close to my best today. So thank you for allowing us to take the day off yesterday. But I want to start the show actually with what I was going to start it with yesterday. And I realize you've probably been soaking in this story, but I got accused of being a little dramatic over the weekend. Me? Dramatic? I don't think so. Never. And using hyperbole, but I want to make sure before I kind of defend the stance that I'm taking on this and the title of today's show, which is Can America Survive This? I genuinely do believe that we're at a turning point in the American experiment and in American history for a lot of reasons, not just for any individual thing, not just because of the insanity happening around immigration enforcement and the response to it, not because we have, you know, a president who is unusual, but is doing what I consider to be really monumental things across the world in terms of, you know, world peace and this unhinged response to what the president's doing, you know, and also because we're in this bizarre social media phase where everybody sees everything that's going on. Everybody has an instant opinion on it. We all just go into our corners and we won't listen to reason and common sense and facts, whatever it is. There's a million reasons. But we're at a crazy period of time in our country. And what I'm seeing specifically unfold in Minnesota, I think, is a microcosm of all of these things that are happening that are very concerning about what's happening in the United States of America and whether our republic, whether we can keep it and keep it alive in the way that our founding fathers intended. So I want to start by just making sure that you understand, you know, the video that I saw, I'm sure you've seen it by now, that resulted in a post I made that had the internet in a tizzy. So, of course, there was the church in Minneapolis where the anti-ICE rioters stormed the church, made a circle around patrons. Here's a clip, and this video is from the perspective of one of the unhinged leftists who participated in the storming of this church.
Renee Good! Renee Good! Renee Good!
Renee Good!
Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Where are your people? Why are you not at Whipple every day fighting for the humanity, standing for our people? Where are you?
You drink your coffee, you got your jewelry, you have your nice clothes, but what do you do? What do you do to stand for your Somali and Latino communities?
I'm not going to comment.
You have no comment. Exactly. You...
All these comfortable white people who are living lavish, comfortable lives while children are dragged into concentration camps. You're living real life, nice lives with your lattes, doing absolutely nothing for your Latino and Somali brothers and sisters.
I'm like shaking. Having watched that. Because it makes me madder and madder and madder and madder every time I see it. The audacity, and never before in human history has the side that storms churches and tries to disrupt worship services been the good side. And I also thought, what if that had been a mosque? Do you really believe if all these, like, that guy's white dude, leftist white dude, stormed into a mosque in the middle of worship, demanding to know why they weren't out there on the front lines fighting against ICE? First, they would have never done that. Never. Disrupting Christians in prayer, 100%, that's totally fine. Never disrupt Muslims in prayer. But if they had, how do you believe the media? if it had been right-wingers who stormed into a mosque? How do you believe the media would cover it? How do you believe Democratic politicians would respond to it? But because it's mostly white Christians engaged in prayer, and because the protesters are there and they're in support of something Democrats are in support of, which is just anything anti-Donald Trump and anti-ICE, almost no condemnation of it. The governor of Minnesota put out some meek little statement about, you know, I've encouraged people to protest peacefully, definitely not in support of people disrupting worshiping. But let's be honest, the response would have been completely different had the roles been reversed. And it was terrifying because what you're looking at there and what we're seeing unfold in Minnesota are literally the tools and the rhetoric that some of the most deadly communist regimes in human history have used. You know, cracking down on worship services. And then there was these videos, not just one, I'll use one as an example, but many videos of these hordes of rioters literally chasing down people in the streets who they just thought looked like they might be undercover ICE agents or conservatives. Chasing them down and surrounding them. In this case, this guy who slipped on the ice, hit his head, needed medical services. The police had to come in and rescue him. He was one of them. He was on their side. But because what? He's white and had camouflage on? They were chasing him through the streets of Minneapolis until he fell and injured himself. They did the same thing to a group of individuals who were inside a coffee shop. I watched this video of them stopping, literally creating citizen checkpoints of this guy who was in a van, and they made him get out and open up the back of his van to show that he wasn't ICE or wasn't carrying anything that would lead them to believe that he's ICE or supportive of ICE. People who are, of course, protesting immigration enforcement and having to come here legally, setting up citizen checkpoints and forcing people to get out of their car and prove that they're on their side. This is what some of the deadliest dictators in history have done. These are their tools. This is their rhetoric. And it's happening in the United States of America. And there's one side of the aisle that either doesn't have an issue with it or has a problem with it and won't say anything, because they don't want to be the ones chased down in the streets. They don't want to be the ones who have rioters storm into their business or storm into their church or storm into their space. And so if you don't see, and I put out this post, it went viral on X, and it was a screenshot of the video I showed you to begin the show, and it was some of these worshipers, and it's this little boy, and he's crying, and he's confused about what's happening as these left-wing rioters circle around people who are worshiping God. I said, I'm a lifelong independent. I dislike party politics, but the literal fate of the American experiment hangs in the balance. We cannot afford to let Republicans lose the midterms. In response to that, there's a lot of people who shared similar sentiments, but the responses varied from, Brandy, you're not an independent, that's laughable, to, this is dramatic, and to, you know, Republicans are doing worse. And my response to the assertion that President Trump and the ICE Gestapo or whatever is worse than what's happening is like, I will take President Trump and all the bumps and bruises that come along with it. There is no single thing he's done that is more dangerous or destructive than literal mobs roaming the streets of an American city to beat or injure or surround people who they believe are against them. It's genuinely terrifying. And the most common response I got is, Brandy, you're not an independent because I voted for Donald Trump. Well, newsflash, most Americans are independents. We also get to vote, and many independents voted for President Trump. And the reason I say we can't afford for Republicans to lose the midterms is there is a true evil that is happening and flourishing in this country. And I believe it more and more every day. And you can have some reasonable disagreements with some of the things that President Trump is doing. And I've had reasonable disagreements. Like with what he's doing with Greenland right now. It's insane. It's such a distraction. We got to find a way if he needs it strategically or whatever it is. But some of his rhetoric around that is insane. But that's one man and one president who has 2.5 years left in his term. Okay? One man. What we're seeing in Minneapolis is the culmination of a decade of unhinged, violent behavior that is starting to take over areas of this country and that is embedding itself in the American left. It's not an ideology. It's not a behavior. It's not a mindset that disappears with a president. Trump's gone in 2.5 years. This faction of the left that grows more emboldened by the day will still be here. That is the greater threat to what's happening in America by far than one man, one president. And so, yes, and yes, I love that people get to tell me whether I'm an independent. Thank you for letting me know that you're the ones who get to dictate whether someone considers themselves an independent. And also, independent doesn't mean you're middle of the road on everything. I have very strong opinions on certain issues. But that doesn't mean I have to belong and pledge my allegiance to a political party. Just asinine. And also, in my life, I voted for Obama, Clinton, Joe Jorgensen, the Libertarian, and Trump. So if you looked at that, you'd probably think I was closer to the left than I am to the right. But I digress. What's happening in Minneapolis is absolutely a microcosm of so many issues facing the country right now. And if people are really concerned about Trump and authoritarianism and the dictatorship and all of these, if they're really concerned about it, right? If they're really concerned about someone that is going to exact too much power over people, totally contrary to what's happening in our country, then they wouldn't be electing people like Zohran Mamdani, who's a communist. They wouldn't be electing socialists. They wouldn't be putting people in positions of power that represent actual totalitarian ideas. And they certainly wouldn't be using and supporting or staying silent when people use the tools of communism to crush dissent, to crush dissenting voices, to hunt people down on the streets. It's just the height of hypocrisy what's happening in America right now. And you don't have to agree with every single thing President Trump does to understand that and to see that. And I really believe that President Donald Trump is saving us from one of the most deranged, unhinged, unscientific periods in American history. And I don't think anybody else could do it. Like, the guy is blunt, he says what he says, he says what he means, he's not always perfect. But I think we needed to match unhinged with a little unhinged. And he's just the man for the job. And if we have a situation in the midterms where now we're at a stalemate and Democrats stop every single element of President Trump's agenda, then what's happening in Minneapolis is going to continue to grow and fester, and it's going to happen in major American cities. And this experiment of ours will come to an end. And I don't know what comes after that. It's not hyperbole. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening locally as I talk about this very hypocritical period of time that we're in, where we're so driven by emotion. Emotion, emotion, emotion. Politics, politics, politics. Allegiances, allegiances, allegiances. So Washington State, as you know, is now joining this group of blue states that are totally performative, trying to ban the Gestapo, these ICE agents, from wearing face masks. There's a bill currently going through the Washington State Legislature that would do just that, that has the support of the governor.
And Pastor, I'm ad-libbing a bit, but I think in your remarks you mentioned anger at injustice as part of your remarks. I'm angry about this, and I think many of you are as well. As an American, I never thought I would see federal agents in masks jumping out of unmarked cars and grabbing people off our streets. This conduct will undoubtedly be remembered as a shameful period in our nation's history. Senator Valdez has a bill that prohibits law enforcement from wearing masks and requires identifying information to be clearly displayed on their uniform. Let's get that legislation to my desk immediately so I can sign that into law.
again, totally performative, because they can't control, as you know, what federal agents do. Federal agents are operating under federal law, and yes, within states, but they can't tell them that they can't wear masks. And of course, there's a pretty good reason why they want to hide their identities. As we've said, they're being doxxed, they're being harassed, their faces and home addresses are being posted. You go around in Seattle and Tacoma right now, you will see signs up with the faces of ICE agents. And instead of Bob Ferguson coming out and saying, look, you know, and I agree, it's not ideal. I don't think it's ideal. These are public servants. I don't want a police state. These are public servants. In an ideal situation, they weren't being targeted for they wouldn't be targeted for death threats. They wouldn't have their home addresses posted. So if you were a real leader who didn't want to spin people up and you wanted to lower the temperature, you would get up there and say, this legislation shouldn't be necessary because we shouldn't be encouraging people to harass ICE agents, to confront ICE agents. We should be speaking out whenever we can when people are trying to dox ICE agents. So it's just insane. But now enter with that context in mind that they're rushing this thing through. It's already had a hearing. They're going to pass this totally performative bill to ban ICE agents from wearing masks. We can't have this with them hiding their identities. Enter the most hypocritical bill in Washington state history. So Attorney General Nick Brown, the state's chief law enforcer, who's sued President Trump a bajillion times, he has request bills. So, you know, the governor or the attorney general, they can have bills that they want introduced on their behalf that their offices are interested in. And they hand it off to a friendly lawmaker who ushers it through Olympia. So this bill, House Bill 2096, is a request from Attorney General Nick Brown. You will not believe this. This is going to blow your mind. It says it's an act relating to the issuance of confidential identification to investigators employed by the Office of the Attorney General. It says it allows the Department of Licensing to issue confidential driver's licenses and identicards to investigators employed by the Office of Attorney General for civil and criminal law enforcement activities. You can't even make this up. So while they're out there losing their ever-loving minds that ICE agents are hiding their identities and we deserve to know who they are, you have the Attorney General of the state of Washington ushering through a bill that would allow his investigators to be able to hide their identities, that would protect the identities of his investigators. Now, to be clear, you're going to hear a little bit of the testimony from the state representative who's introducing and sponsoring this bill on the Attorney General's behalf. To be clear, I don't mind the bill. You'll hear the rationale in a second. The rationale makes a lot of sense. But under the shadow of your righteous indignation of ICE agents shielding their identities, it is absolutely insane. So here is Representative Julia Reed as she introduces the bill to the Public Safety Committee.
I'm pleased to bring before you this very small little AG request, Attorney General's request bill.
I love how, first of all, just stop. This is a very small, can you play that one more time, Nicole?
I'm pleased to bring before you this very small little AG request, Attorney General's request bill.
Harmless. I'm sorry, it was the House Transportation Committee, not Public Safety. I'm very pleased to bring before you this very small, no big deal. Nobody look at this. Nobody point out the hypocrisy of this. This very small, tiny little AG request bill. It's like, no. This is the most hypocritical bill I've ever seen. But then again, she goes on to explain, if you are totally, look at this in a silo, in a little bubble, and don't consider anything else happening in the state or the country right now, the rationale the Attorney General's office gives for needing this authority for his agents to have, you know, basically fake IDs makes a lot of sense. So I'll let her explain it.
I'm pleased to bring before you this very small little AG request, Attorney General's request bill. related to a practice that it's my understanding the Department of Licensing previously regularly engaged in, which is the issuing of confidential identicards to attorney general investigators who are looking into things like advertising of tobacco products to children against state law, who are looking into a whole range of enforcement mechanisms. Some officers within the Attorney General's office who are engaged in this do use their personal IDs. Others prefer to not have their personal information be exposed. And in some cases, it may be disadvantageous, just as it's disadvantageous in law enforcement undercover investigations, for folks for that information to be exposed when someone could look up easily on LinkedIn, oh, this person works at the Attorney General's office.
You don't say. Some of these agents, some of these investigators prefer not to have their personal information out there in the course of doing their jobs? You don't say. Gosh, that sounds reasonable to me. Now, maybe we take that exact same rationale and we apply it to the federal agents who are enforcing federal law. It's like it's totally lost on them. Do you think it's totally lost on them how hypocritical that sounds? And they just are like, oh, we're just going about, or do they know? And they don't care? What is it? I mean, the rationale is totally there. They're doing some of these undercover investigations. She gives an example, like they go into liquor stores and try to figure out if somebody will sell them, you know, booze and they're underage. And so, you know, they need an ID that isn't them and maybe shows they're younger. That makes a lot of sense. And also they're engaging in investigations. They don't want somebody to have their real name and all this stuff. And they Google it and say, well, that's an investigator for the AG's office. It's undercover stuff. Duh. Yes, the bill should pass. I'm totally in support of it. There you go, Nick Brown. You have my support on your AG request bill. Investigators should be able to do these covert operations and to be able to do it without being doxxed or without being found out. Totally in support of that. Now, why don't you come out against the bill to make ICE agents and law enforcement officers uncover their faces? Because just the way she speaks about it, you know, oh, they don't want somebody to get their personal information out there. Oh my God, good God, woman. You can't see the hypocrisy. And I guarantee that Julia Reed, put a bookmark on it. I guarantee that Julia Reed votes in favor of the bill to ban ICE agents from wearing masks. Because that bill is also twofold, remember, and it's not just for ICE agents, it's for any law enforcement. You can't wear masks and you've got to easily be identifiable, you know, with your name and law enforcement agency and all these things. So they got the one bill because Orange Man bad, making it harder for police to protect their identity, and one bill because they just can't see their hypocrisy, making it harder for investigators with the Attorney General's office to hide their identity or to be exposed, to have their information exposed. It's just wild. So Julia Reed, she'll usher this through. She'll support the totally performative bill on banning masks. It's just insane. Meanwhile, so this is obvious, right? I think anyone, politics aside, could look at this and say, you know, Attorney General Nick Brown, isn't this a little bit hypocritical? But you think the media is doing that? You think the legacy media is doing that? No, of course not. Here's what the Seattle Times ran about Nick Brown this morning. A glowing profile, Washington AG Nick Brown, a year on the job taking the fight to Trump. Puke. In no context do I like glowing profiles of politicians. It's just not necessary. His office could do this. His office can send out a year in review taking the fight to Donald Trump. The newspaper of record in the state he serves doesn't have to do it. And I encourage you, I hate to give the Seattle Times a click, but if you go into this story, it talks about, you know, all these lawsuits against Trump and he's a good guy. It has, I kid you not. So the picture you're seeing there, and then it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 other photographs of Nick Brown on the job. Nick Brown holding court, holding meetings. Nick Brown smiling and laughing. Nick Brown in his office. Nick Brown in a trench coat walking in front of the state capitol. Nick Brown meeting with constituents. And then there's even a photo, I kid you not, oh my gosh, I wish I'd pulled this up for the show today. The writing underneath it says, Attorney General Nick Brown and his son Whitaker, 11, at the West Seattle Farmers Market last month. And it's a picture of Nick Brown with his arm around his son, strolling through a farmer's market. Are you kidding me? That's the Seattle Times. You think the Seattle Times is going to run a story today pointing out the hypocrisy of this bill that the Attorney General is trying to push? No, of course not. They're running a glowing profile piece and posting photos of him with his arm around his son, strolling through a farmer's market, just a regular dad fighting Donald Trump. Good God, and we wonder why people like this win. What else is the Seattle Times up to today? So I used to have a very busy weekend in the Pacific Northwest. I saw all these videos being put out of them out, you know, conducting enforcement actions. And you could say, you know, a good story for the Times would be, hey, and do you have this video still from the Katie video? Mm-hmm. Katie Davis Court put out all this video over the weekend of ICE agents who were out trying to enforce immigration law. There was an instance where one of their targets ran on foot. And they had to go chase him down in traffic. And so, of course, people are filming it because they're probably going to go back and post it on Facebook and say, Trump's Gestapo out there harassing community members. Now, look, maybe the Seattle Times for a story could go look into. What is the background of these people who ICE was out arresting this weekend in Washington State? You know, are they the worst of the worst, like President Trump says? You know, are they, what are they doing? In detail, point by point, let people know what's actually happening out on the streets. I think that would be a good use of their journalistic abilities, don't you think? And I'd be fine with whatever they come up with. Maybe there's some individuals who are in the country illegally but have no law violations. They want to point out that that's not the worst of the worst or whatever it is. Oh, no, here's the kind of stories that they're doing on what's going down right now with immigration enforcement. In an act of ICE resistance, Seattleites make hundreds of whistle kits. They got a photo of these white ladies, one of them real masked up, making whistle kits to alert their neighbors of the presence of ICE. Here's how it reads. About 3 dozen people gathered at Rainier Beach's public library Sunday afternoon to assemble whistle kits, a tool that activists nationwide have turned to as a means of alerting neighbors and deterring immigration and customs enforcement. Rainier Beach resident Lisa McGee organized Sunday's event, which occurs every other week. Every other week they're making whistle kits. She said the turnout Sunday represented a huge increase from previous weeks. Just 5 people had attended the previous meeting. She said, from here, the hope is we get them in the door with whistles and then we can activate them further, encourage them to do more local organizing. Each kit contains a 3D printed whistle, a pamphlet with tips on when to use the whistle, and a wallet-sized card with a script on how to speak to ICE agents trying to enter your home, written in both English and Ethiopian. Interesting. Goes on to say Katie Bridges of Rainier Beach brought her 4 children to the event. Ah, yes, indoctrinate them early. She and her husband have had tough conversations with their kids about what to do if ICE agents visit their schools or approach their friends who are people of color. Her children between the ages of 9 and 15 have felt scared and curious at times while discussing intensifying immigration enforcement by President Donald Trump's administration. Yeah, I wonder why they feel scared and tense. Their mom is hosting events creating whistle kits. Insane. She said, as you're talking to kids about it, you're trying to both paint a picture of you're safe at school, but also let them know some kids are not safe. They are going to get taken. This is what this mom said the Seattle Times. When she talks to her kids that are between the ages of 9 and 15, she tells them that they're safe as white kids, but that some of their friends are going to get taken. And then you wonder why kids have felt scared about what's happening? You literally told them that some of their friends are going to get taken. This is what the media focuses on. And in the rare instance that they focus on an actual enforcement act by ICE, what do? They believe the saddest narrative and push the saddest narrative possible. And I'm not making that up. We've done many stories. The famous example of Paco, that the Olympian wrote a sob story about this poor farmer named Paco who was scooped up by ICE agents and he was nothing but a law-abiding farmer and business owner, and a GoFundMe had been started. Found out the guy's name isn't even Paco, it was Youssef, and he was a wanted murderer from Mexico. So they're very quick to print the most the most sad version of an ICE enforcement possible with little to no fact checking. And they just push it out and there's no consequence for them because people just eat it up. Their readership isn't questioning it. Their readership is now conditioned to believe it. Yes, ICE is tearing farmers out of their fields. Yes, ICE is ripping kids away and taking kids from schools because of the color of their skin. And why would they not believe it? The Seattle Times, the Olympian, major news publications that were once well-respected are telling them that this is happening. And they're not questioning at all. Do you think that the Seattle Times, anywhere in here, pointed out that children aren't being taken at school? That there's not a single example of that? No, because the Seattle Times is the same outlet that ran this entire sob story saying child care centers across the state are on edge because of ICE enforcement when there was only one example. They made it sound like this was a pervasive issue happening at every single daycare in the state. There was one example of a mom on her way to daycare who got stopped by ICE in a targeted enforcement action, and ICE even let her continue to drop off her child and made sure that the child was going to be okay. And they wrote a whole story making it sound like every single daycare has had this happen in the entire state and waited till the very bottom paragraph to admit there's only one example. Do we have the Seattle Times? I should have been Seattle Times is trash. I totally forgot. The Seattle Times is trash, everybody. Absolute trash, garbage. And there's outlets like this across the country. And that's what leads people in Minneapolis to get so spun up. That's what leads people here to get so spun up. That's what leads lawmakers to introduce bills like we're going to ban ICE agents from wearing masks. I've said it a million freaking times. There's a reason I left Legacy News. The number one culprit of virtually everything wrong that's happening in our country is the Legacy News. The number one culprit, because they're the only ones with a responsibility to share the truth and a responsibility to hold people in powerful accountable, and they're failing on both fronts every single day. And if you're giving them a dime of your money, one single click that they can add to their account to go out and get advertisers and fund their newsroom, you are contributing to the decline of America. And no, that is not hyperbole. All right, coming up next, there is a renewed effort to try to tackle fraud in Washington State. Will it go anywhere? Before we get there, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are fantastic. We hear so many good things about just what they bring to the table compared to other real estate agents. Mark B. said, all I can say about Wes, it was a very smooth experience, just what I was hoping for. We had to sell my mom's house, and it needed a little bit of prep, new carpet, paint, yard work. None of us live nearby. And Wes, Erica, and the entire team over there took care of it all. We got asking price and sold the first weekend. Five stars for Wes from Mark B., a recent client of his. And we hear so many stories like that, especially when it comes to people who, you know, maybe they've already moved and they're trying to sell their home. Maybe they're trying to sell a family member's home and they don't live in the area. And just the amount of service and attention that Wes Jones and his team gives them is just such a weight off their shoulders, especially with his Listing Boost concierge service, where they come in and they can help with all the cosmetic upgrades and everything like that. So just totally takes the stress off your plate. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com if you're thinking about selling your home. You can also buy with Wes as well, but sellwithwes.com is the website, a better way to sell your home. I told you so should be the theme of my show all the time. So I played this these clips on the show last week with Democrats losing their freaking minds in Olympia when reporters were questioning them about childcare fraud. So, of course, there was a story out of Minneapolis, and that led to independent and some legacy outlets like Como News looking into the issue of whether we have childcare fraud or overpayments or really anything fishy going on with childcare in Washington State, like what was happening in Minnesota. And when confronted with this at a press briefing last week, I said, doth protest too much, because the reaction and the anger, and it was anger, that Democrats were responding to reasonable questions with really was telling to me. Here's some clips.
If you were knocking on that door and I found out about it, I would lose my mind. That is a home. That is a home where a business operates to care for toddlers.
If it's a taxpayer-subsidized daycare, we have every right to knock on the door and say, are you a legit operation?
The Department of Children, Youth, and Families audits all of them every year. Did you report that to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families?
Right.
Did you write a story about it?
You may have the right to do that. It's not right to do that.
Yeah, angry that reporters had gone to knock on the doors of taxpayer-subsidized childcare facilities to see if they were legitimate. And a couple days before that, what did you have? You had the attorney general of the state, the mayor of Seattle, basically suggesting that journalists investigating these things could amount to a hate crime because they were going to Somali-run daycares. And what do you call it? Oh, racist.
But I was really concerned was about the level of harassment, you know, sort of random vigilante people just showing up on people's doorsteps. Like, that would make all of us scared. And some of the rhetoric around it, frankly, is racist.
And despite ample evidence from the state auditor's office that in the past few years, you know, they found $2 million in misappropriated funds to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. They found that there weren't proper controls on maybe something like $400 billion in funds. So despite some smoke, Democrats in charge of budget talks in the House and Senate, when they were confronted with, hey, should we be doing maybe a little more oversight or a little more auditing? They basically said, hey, there's nothing to see here. We've got this handled.
We need to explore what is at our disposal right now, which I think, and find out what, if anything, are the shortfalls with the current system before we go down a road of, trying to uncover stuff.
We do our own analysis and work. I would like to explore all the options that we currently have available for oversight, which we have a lot.
So I've been a reporter in the state for 15 plus years. I've been covering politicians for that entire period of time. And you get to know really well what certain responses mean. And when you have that much hostility and animosity from politicians in response to a line of questioning, you know automatically that there's something going on there. And it turns out, according to the current state auditor, there absolutely is. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that, especially right now during the legislative session. This is the headline from the Post Millennial. Washington auditor, a Democrat, by the way, let's keep that in mind, missing data made it impossible to track where child care federal funds went. The current elected state auditor in Washington, a Democrat, is saying that there is no way these Democrat legislators could even know whether there is rampant fraud in child care, because we are missing, it has been withheld from us, key data that would help us make that determination. Here's the reporting from Como News. Como's been doing great work on this. Auditor highlights gaps in past Washington Child Care Fund audits. Como News has learned of alleged serious oversight and accountability gaps at the Washington Department of Children, Youth, and Families over the last 4 years when it comes to payments to child care providers. Washington State Auditor Pat McCarthy told Como News the agency, DCYF, lacked access to provider-level data in the last 4 statewide audits. She said the data is needed to fully track where the money is going. So all these indignant lawmakers, I've seen no evidence of fraud. There's no evidence of fraud. How dare you even look into this? It's racist to even ask. The state auditor is saying, well, might be fraud, there might not be fraud, but we can't even tell you for sure, because during the last 4 statewide audits, DCYF has withheld from us critical data that would help us make that determination. A Democrat. The auditor. Wild. More from Como News. It says, this is the quote from the auditor to Como. They are probably the most risky of all departments in state government. She says DCYF, handling the child care funds, From an auditor's perspective, she calls it the most risky of all the departments in state government. She said, quote, by not complying with federal law requirements to maintain adequate support and documentation for expenditures, DCYF made it impossible for our office to audit the federal dollars it used for payments to child care providers. Because we could not test transactional level detail, we also could not determine whether the issues we identified in prior audits had improved or worsened, including the department's lack of adequate internal controls and significant rate of non-compliance for payments to child care providers. Because the department did not comply with HHS requirements to allow for the tracing of grant expenditures to a payment level, we are requesting all $415 million in federal program costs it incurred during the audit period. So think about this. It's not me. It's not the Center Square. It's not Como News that has been digging into this. Just saying, oh, because of what's happening in Minnesota, let's just see. Let's just be racist. And there's Somali daycares here and the daycares in Minnesota. There's a lot of fraud there. So let's just go, just assume that all the Somali daycares here are fraudulent and ask questions about it. Not just us. The Democrat in charge of audits in the state of Washington says, yeah, we got big problems. It's the most risky thing to audit in the state. It's the most risky thing when it comes to whether there's fraud, waste, and abuse, because we don't even have the data, the payment level data, where this money is going out to. We don't even have it to be able to tell you if it's fraudulent. And we're the ones being treated like horrible people for inquiring when the state auditor is saying, yeah, we'd like to inquire too, but we can't. And now we're going back and we're trying to do that to the tune of $415 million. To see whether it was even used appropriately. Gee, Democratic legislators, why don't we wait until that audit is done? Why don't we wait until they hand over that information before you get so indignant to questions from the media about what is being done to see if there's fraud and whether there is fraud in some of these childcare facilities? I mean, that's like the bare minimum, right? I told you, as soon as they were being that angry and confrontational when asked these questions, I was like, absolutely, I bet we're talking about tens of millions of dollars worth of fraud. I bet we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars worth of fraud. Because you just don't get that angry unless there's there. Because if you didn't suspect it, you would say, well, yeah, hey, we've got all these oversights and controls. Go ahead. There's no harm into it. Let's take a look. We have no problem with that. That's what somebody who didn't believe that there was anything wrong would say. But if you believe that it's going to show widespread fraud, of course, you're going to be like, oh, no. You're racist. You're racist for looking into it. How dare you knock on the doors of childcare facilities? That's how you know there's something up. Meanwhile, some Republican lawmakers are taking steps to try to improve laws as it pertains to preventing fraud, because that's what we all want, right? Audits are fine. Audits are important. They're necessary. But when an audit finds something, that usually means it's too late. That usually means the money's been misspent, and then you can try to fix it moving forward. But the idea is to prevent fraud. So you recall our whistleblower report that we aired at the end of October. The headline, State Equity Program Became a Fund for Personal Enrichment. And in it, we detailed something called the Community Reinvestment Program, which is essentially a $250 million reparations fund. It was set up by the legislature in 2021, and it created this massive pool of money that went to BIPOC nonprofits across the state. And their job was to put it in the hands of Black or community members of color to buy homes, help with down payment assistance, to pay off personal credit card debt, to be able to put them in a better position to buy a home, to help them open businesses and get business loans, etc. We found out via a whistleblower that this became basically a $250 million fund for self-dealing, where you had entities like the Seattle, the BIPOC Black people called? Urban League, sorry, the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle, that were using it to help their friends and family members and help themselves buy houses. There was a daughter of a woman at the Urban League of Seattle who got $350,000 to buy a house, just free money, just like that. There was a woman who works at the Urban League who got $50,000 in credit card debt paid off. And so they were using it as a fund for personal enrichment. So there is a bill that was just introduced from State Senator John Braun, a Republican. It's Senate Bill 6205, and it would seek to put some protocols in place to prevent that kind of self-dealing. It says it's an act relating to increasing accountability for the distribution of grants for economically disadvantaged people. And in it, he mentions specifically the Community Reinvestment Program, and I'll read the two passages that are relevant to the change in state law. So it would add these two key pieces of oversight. It would say an officer or family member of an officer of an organization under this subsection must not directly or indirectly have a beneficial interest in or receive any compensation, gratuity, or reward in connection with loans or grant projects under this section. It would also say the Department of Commerce must evaluate the distribution of the loan or grant projects under this subsection biannually. The evaluation must contain the eligibility requirements, the number of participants and their corresponding eligibility categories, and metrics for determining success and success rates. These evaluations must be made available to the legislature upon request. Now ask yourself, why would anyone oppose that? So this is a case where, you know, unlike the childcare situation, now there are, with the childcare situation in our state, there is ample evidence, according to the auditor, that they can't properly audit where those funds are going. Now, if they're able to, will it show widespread fraud? We don't know yet. But this is a situation where we already know, because of our reporting and our whistleblower, that there's ample evidence of self-dealing, that self-dealing is happening, that these BIPOC groups are getting the money, and in many instances, they're using it for themselves and their family members, as opposed, and then turning at the same time, turning away other community members saying, we're out of money, while they themselves take the money. Now, whether that's criminal, I know that there's an ongoing investigation at the Attorney General's office in combination with the Department of Commerce, and that's something that's ongoing, I'm told. But whether it should be allowed, it clearly should not, right? So we know it's happening. There's evidence of it happening. There's an investigation into it happening. And this bill is very common sense. Hey, if you get one of these contracts, you can't use it on yourself. Can't use the money for yourself or your family members. Can't benefit from it financially. So this should pass. Every single member of the legislature should vote yes on this, right? Do you think they will? Do you think it'll get a hearing? Because that would be insane. And then you could say people who don't support this are pro-fraud. They're pro-abuse of the system. Because there's no other reason not to make this simple fix to the Community Reinvestment Program. If we give you the money to get to the community, you cannot use it on yourself. That's fair. And hell, I'm in favor, if you've got somebody who works at the Urban League who does qualify, they meet all the other criteria to get some of these funds for down payment assistance. You know, is it fair if they're excluded just because they work at the Urban League? Maybe not. But you know what an easy workaround is to do it fairly and make sure that there's nothing untoward happening? There's dozens of other nonprofits that get the CRP funds. Have it be part of the thing that they would then have to apply through a different nonprofit and have that nonprofit weigh their worthiness for the program, not their own nonprofit. That's simple, right? That would be a fair fix. So we are going to find out whether Democrats in Olympia are pro-fraud. Because if this bill doesn't go anywhere, I can come to no other conclusion. Then they are perfectly fine with millions in taxpayer funds being used for self-dealing because it helps them win elections. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. Coming up next, Governor Bob Ferguson claims Republicans totally support his millionaire's tax. And there's a poll out that proves it. We'll discuss first. If you're concerned about the tech bubble, people keep talking about tech bubble, AI bubble, and maybe you're worried about how it could impact your retirement portfolio, you still have time to sign up for Bulwark Capital's free New Year Reset live webinar. It's happening January 29th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time with our friend Zach Abraham. Zach is going to discuss the impact AI could have on the 2026 market, how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register right now for his free New Year Reset live webinar. It's happening January 29th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. So next week, next Thursday, you can sign up at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. And while you're there, make sure to subscribe to Zach's Daily Market Recap. All right. Well, what can we do? I guess Governor Bob Ferguson says even Republicans support his tax on millionaires. So I guess they might as well just pass the thing. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Doop. Okay. So Bob Ferguson, of course, they're trying to tax millionaires. We know what it really is. This is going to be an income tax on millionaires that down the road they turn into an income tax on everyone when so many millionaires leave that it's no longer bringing in the revenue that they expected that it would. That's the plan. So Governor Ferguson posted over the weekend about it. He said, news on the millionaires tax. It's receiving majority support in Washington state from Republicans. Washingtonians are ready to change our upside down tax system. And then his tweet, of course, because why not? Was highlighted by his friends at the Seattle Times, who just love them some Bob Ferguson. The headline, guess who supports a millionaire's tax? Republicans, Washington poll finds. Interesting, okay. So the poll in question is from DHM Research. They put out a blog about it on January 6th, which, mind you, is before we even have the text of the millionaire's tax or before we even really know exactly what the millionaire's tax is going to do. So interesting timing for the poll. It says, are Washingtonians finally ready for a state income tax? So it asked the question about it. Percentage total support of the millionaire's tax. So they divided the support based on income, education, and party. So they basically said that the highest income levels that responded to their poll actually had, if you make more than $150,000 a year, 71% support for a millionaire's tax. People with a college degree were more likely to support a millionaire's tax. And then here's the designation or the breakdown based on party and ideology. Democrats, 74% in favor. Independents, 52% in favor. And Republicans? 54% of Republicans support taxing millionaires? Wow, that's pretty significant. Our friend Ari Hoffman pointed out something interesting, though, about this poll. And look, I will acknowledge that Democrats are doing this for a messaging reason. When you just come out and say, do you support taxing millionaires? That is far less nuanced than the reality of the proposal and the reality of what will happen if the millionaire's tax takes place and the reality of the fact that it's not just meant to be an income tax on millionaires. It is eventually going to be an income tax on everyone. But they're counting, and they've said behind the scenes that their messaging is about tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. And they believe that voters, when there's inevitably an initiative for this, they believe that voters will vote to keep it because of the tax the rich, just like they did the tax on capital gains, which has been very bad for our state. But they went out there, they spent millions of dollars on the airwaves just pushing it as a tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. And even in red counties, voters said, yeah, let's keep the tax on capital gains. So Ari Hoffman pointed out something that I thought was very interesting. When we look at, you know, why was this poll done? Who was this poll done by? He said, did your tax dollars pay for a rigged poll? I've never met a Republican who supports an income tax. Now Democrats in the Seattle Times are pushing a poll claiming the majority of Republicans support one. DHM Research, which did the poll, was bought in 2021 by political PR firm Quinn Thomas. Quinn Thomas has done over $3 million in business with the state of Washington from fiscal year 2023. So just the last 2 years, Quinn Thomas has done $3 million in business with the state of Washington. Now, Ari asks, did our own tax dollars pay for a survey to support a narrative to tax us more? That's quite possible. We need to get to the bottom of who exactly paid for this particular poll and who paid for it to be done. But that aside, even if the state didn't use tax dollars to fund a poll that would fit its narrative, someone who does millions of dollars worth of business with a state controlled by Democrats did the poll that supports Democrats' narrative. What are the chances they did the poll fairly? What are the chances they had a good sample set? What are the questions that, what are the chances the questions were fair? People should be highly skeptical of this poll and the firm that did it and the reasoning behind it. They're using it to prop up Governor Bob Ferguson's millionaire's tax. And then they take that poll and they give it to the least critical news outlet. They give it to the news outlet that endorses Bob Ferguson for governor. They give it to the news outlet that does a soft fluff piece today on the Attorney General, Nick Brown. And then that news outlet doesn't question the poll at all. Doesn't question the fact that, gee, in Washington, voters have never supported an income tax, so maybe there's something going on with the way that this poll was formulated. Doesn't go out and actually speak to Republicans. Nope, they use the poll that was done by a firm that just got $3 million from the state in the last 2 years. And they push it out there because it supports the narrative of Democrats. And that's how the whole cycle works. So be wary of stories you see about the millionaire's tax. All right, let's really quick talk about this shooting that happened in Portland. So there was a shooting in Portland over the weekend. Two Portland police officers shot. Here's a little bit of video from the scene that was taken by Geyer Digital. I'll just read you what Portland police, they put out a picture of the suspect, haven't gotten him yet. But it says basically that Portland police were called to a weapons call. They got there. There was a suspect who fired shots at the officers, struck two of them. Officers were transported to the hospital by ambulance. They were treated. Thankfully, they survived. They're in stable condition. The suspect ran off. Numerous officers set up a perimeter around the area to contain the suspect, brought in canines, air support, all these things, were not able to find the suspect. And as of this moment, still have not found the suspect, who's like a white male. I really wonder, based on his appearance and, you know, face partially covered, hat down low, hood up, this seems like an ambush to me. It seems a lot like an ambush of officers, just based on how he looks and the fact that they got this call that brought them to the area and the suspect immediately shot at them. Now, this is really sad. I'm glad the officers are okay. But I couldn't help but notice, maybe I'm mean for pointing this out. You can tell me I'm mean for pointing this out. But remember when officers or ICE agents shot at the two TDA gang members, and it was this whole ordeal because it came after the Minneapolis ICE shooting, and the chief of police in Portland came out and even acknowledged their ties to TDA, but then literally cried when talking about the impact that the shooting of, not even fatal, shooting of violent gang members had on the Latino community?
I want to speak for just a moment specifically to my Latino community. It saddens me that we even have to qualify these remarks, because I understand, or at least have attempted to understand through your voices, your concern, your fear, your anger.
Blubbering fool. He comes out after the shooting. Two officers shot. You think he cried? No. And I might be mean for the pointing that out. I know that we're in a situation like this, ongoing. Maybe just your professionalism takes over. But he's a blubbering fool at this press conference, crying about a shooting of two TDA gang members who tried to run over ICE agents. And then he comes out, and I wish I had the video, I just didn't have time to pull it before the show. Then he comes out And he's just given a matter-of-fact press conference about, and his two officers in the hospital. It didn't seem right to me. It absolutely didn't seem right to me. And you can call me mean for pointing that out, but he cries for the TDA gang members, doesn't cry for his own officers. Interesting. I have more national news coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They can help you navigate this complex world of rules and regulations that we're in right now, you know, around rent control and all of that. And then this time of year, they're down in Olympia working on your behalf, trying to stop more bad policies from coming down from the mount and just ruining everyone's lives. So rhawa.org to become a member. And they only are accept membership from small to mid-sized landlords. So if you're one of the big guys, RHA is just not for you, but you know, they're still working on your behalf as well. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. So the trans issue is going to continue to be a major narrative heading into the midterms and also the 2028 presidential election. And I believe it's clear that public opinion on this issue is shifting. And you kind of know that based on how squirrely politicians are being about it. Remember, I asked Governor Ferguson a couple weeks ago whether he would support boys playing against his own daughter. And he's like, I'm not even going to answer that question. You're so obsessed with trans kids. It's not because he was like offended by the question or doesn't like me or whatever it is. It's because he doesn't want to be on the record. He does not want to yes or no on the record because he is a smart guy. And all throughout his career, he has positioned himself where he thinks public opinion is the most advantageous to him. And I think that he sees where this issue of dudes and girls sports is heading, and he wants some plausible deniability. Now, we're not going to give it to him, but he doesn't want that sound on tape to come back and haunt him. You know what I mean? And that similar, very cagey way of responding to this is also happening in the 2028 field for potential presidential nominees on the Democrat side. So Axios put out this article, Dems potential 2028 contenders, cautious on trans rights. So they went out and they asked all of the possible Democrats who are, you know, at least their names are being floated as, you know, maybe presidential contenders. And they asked them about this issue of boys in girls sports. And it's interesting how cagey all of them are being on the topic. So they pointed out, first of all, there's a few. Former Vice President Harris, New York Rep. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, New York Senator Cory Booker, Kentucky Governor Andrew Beshear, Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, California Rep. Ro Khanna, and Gavin Newsom declined to even comment or respond to Axios on should boys be in girls sports. Wouldn't even comment. That tells you a lot, right? That the tide is turning on this. They did point out that when Gavin Newsom had Ben Shapiro on his podcast, Shapiro pointed out that he wouldn't answer the question. And Newsom replied to the boys and girls sports question, or whether the question was actually that Axios posed, can boys become girls? So it's sort of more than just the girls sports issue. It's about, can boys become girls? So Newsom replied, yeah, I think for the grace of God, like what it, he just rambled, right? A spokesperson for Governor Shapiro pointed us to his previous remarks to The Atlantic, in which he said local scholastic sports officials, not politicians, should make decisions about transgender athletes. So he just punted, said, oh, that should be up to sports leagues. It said Rahm Emanuel, who's, I think, putting his own name in the running for 2028. He's the only one who answered their questions about should boys be in girls sports and then can boys become girls. He just said no. He's the only one in the whole Democratic field that they questioned that just gave a straight up, he said, he also said parents should make decisions about whether transgender minors are able to access hormones. And I don't think he has anything to lose, right? Because he's not in an elected position right now. So maybe he's not so worried. Like if the only thing he ever does is run for president, he doesn't risk anything right now by just coming out and saying no. And then Pete Buttigieg, he called for compassion and questioned past orthodoxies in my party around sports. He said decisions about trans athletes should be made by sports leagues. There you go, punting again. And his spokesperson didn't address the other questions. So wouldn't address the question about can boys become girls, which is like the most simple question you can even ask. Clearly the answer is no. And there's an artful way, if you're trying not to offend a certain segment of your base, to say like, hey, you could even say, I believe that people can identify as a woman and, you know, that's really who they are. They just weren't born that way. But of course, biologically, you can't just become a woman. But they won't even say that. They won't even say, no, a boy can't become a woman. But if they really believed it, right, and they thought that that was going to be a popular issue in 2028, they would just say, yes, of course. But they see public opinion shifting on this issue, which is a good thing, but it's still cowardly for them not to answer no to a very obvious question like that. But it shows they're already reading the tea leaves, so maybe we're about to come out of this period of time, but the only one who gets credit from me is Rahm Emanuel. No, boys can't become girls. No, boys shouldn't be able to play against girls. So even though he's never going to be president of the United States, I give him a little bit of credit for that. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X about the 2028 campaign on the Democratic side, because we're starting to see all these people posture potentially for the job. So I gave you four options on Patreon, Locals, and X. I said, who would you want to be if the decision was being made today? Who would you want the Democratic nominee to be? Newsom, AOC, Shapiro, that's Josh Shapiro, not Ben Shapiro, or Kamala Harris.
I'm going to say Harris because I know we can win.
Okay. See, I'm wondering how strategic people are, because right, obviously we have a lot of Republicans who watch the show. So naturally, you're going to want the worst person for the job. And I would have to agree with you. I even think AOC would have a better chance.
I think so, Kamala Harris. She's a little bit, she can crafty speak in her responses.
Yes, she actually can put a sentence together. Yes. I think if you're going about this question in the sense of like, who's strategy, the worst, yeah, I think Harris for sure. But if you're going about this question in the sense of what's best for America if they win, Josh Shapiro.
Okay.
100%, mm-hmm, without a question. And I actually believe the person who would be the worst for America, this might be unpopular,
gonna say Newsom,
Gavin Newsom. Here's why, and I'll get to your guys' responses.
All of it. Okay, go ahead. You say yours first.
We don't know who he is.
Okay,
I know who AOC is. Mm-hmm. I know who Kamala Harris is. I know in terms of like, I know you know what their politics are. Mm-hmm. Gavin is a total wild card. He will be whoever he thinks he needs to be. He's very Bob Ferguson in that sense. Like AOC, I know what she's going to try to do. Mm-hmm. Now, it would be bad if it happens, but also she would show on a world stage really that dangerous element of the Democratic Party. But I actually think Newsom would be the worst because he's so unpredictable.
So I think that Newsom's goal is to get to the president's chair, right? And so 100%. I think that is his goal. And, you know, once he accomplishes it, he'll just get in there and do the work. Where AOC, her goal is takeover. Her goal is not the presidency. Her goal is to destroy the country.
Yeah.
And so I think the repercussions of her getting that seat are worse than Newsom because he just wants to get in there and do the job. I don't think he wants to destroy us. He just wants the job.
Agree to disagree.
But correct. Yes. He is who he needs to be when he wants to be it.
So you guys responded, if the 2028 presidential primary process was unfolding today, who would you want to be the Democratic nominee? 47% say Josh Shapiro.
Yeah.
And that's what you guys are approaching it from, you know, that
if
position
we lose,
of
worst the case scenario.
Who, yeah. Mm-hmm. Least bad option. Let's see. Jet Fuel Genius, Josh Shapiro is the least worst choice. Mm-hmm. Freeloading Eric says, I would like to see Newsom. Then the country could call his landslide loss a referendum on his and the DNC's anti-capitalism policies. Rachel Harris, easy win for Republicans, mimicking Nicole's rationale. A lot of you are saying none of the above, which is a total cop-out because that's not one of the options. Let's see here. Patsy, talk about a Hobbes choice. They are all dumpster fires. I said Newsom because I can look at California and know I don't want that for my country. So it just gives an easier choice, I guess. Hydro Dog, I wouldn't vote for any of those, but if Newsom does get the nomination, he probably will destroy any of the current Republicans in a debate, then factor in the whiplash effect coming from Trump. Yeah, Newsom, he can fool people easily, I think. And he's, I mean, just in the last 6 months, he's been a moderate, a far leftist, a moderate, a far leftist by the day. He changes by the day. But he also, I think, can debate well, although he got schooled in the debate with Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis pulled out the poop map, which was the best debate moment in the history of debates. It really was. And it wasn't even like an official debate of any kind. It was just governor versus
governor.
And I
do think his body movements and hand gestures are working against him. He thinks that's his charm, but I think it gives away his nervousness or anxiety when he's asked a question that's difficult, and it gives him this time to think about it, and that kind of gives him away.
The one, you know what the least likable thing about Gavin Newsom is, just from like a totality of his hair? It makes him look untrustworthy. It makes him look like a quote unquote used car salesman. It's just the slicked back sort of hair. That fixing that would be a good start. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream. Thank you, Nicole. Coming up next, first, our friends at Valentine Roofing have been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for 3 years in a row. So why would you trust anyone else with your roofing needs? And right now, this time of year, as we enter the coldest point of the year in the Pacific Northwest, when it comes to staying warm and insulated, it all starts with your roof and attic. Up to 25% of your home's heat loss is through your attic. So if your furnace is working overtime, it's time to call Valentine. And right now, when you bundle attic insulation with any new roof, you'll save an additional 10% off the entire project, and Valentine has exceptional financing options that are built around your budget. So lock in your winter bundle savings. Call 206-ROOFING today for your estimate. Again, call 206-ROOFING, and please tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. And remember, when you see the red Valentine vans, you know your home is in good hands. All right, some comments from the live stream. On the storming of the church, you want to join us, Nicole?
Yeah.
Sorry, you were just here, and then you left, and now you come back. You didn't say anything, by the way, about my new hair.
Oh, yeah, because I saw it last week, I forgot that I had...
It's blonder.
It's blonder and shorter.
Well, just like an
inch. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Looks fresh.
Yes, thank you. See how I just beg for compliments? It's my life. It.
You're really sad. No, like, did anybody... notice that? I haven't seen the comments.
I don't know. It's there's usually blonder people.
Very spicy.
Usually people are very quick. I could change one thing. I could probably change one book on the bookshelf and someone would be like, did you take off George Bush's memoir? I actually did remove.
You hate George Bush?
So down here, there had been a Bill Clinton book. And it's just because they're color-coded, right?
Yeah.
I just color-coded all the books. So there was a Bill Clinton book, and it was gold, and the bottom shelf is gold, and you can see it when we do a two-shot interview. And all these people are like, is that a Bill Clinton book? And it was, like, obsessive. People are like, where's that book? So I just took it out. Okay, I took it out. I moved it. All right. On the storming of the church in Minneapolis, Matt M., no accountability or arrests leads to crap like this. Now the feds are saying they're going to use, there's a couple federal acts that prohibit behavior like this. Now they're even talking about arresting Don Lemon, who was there, and he was like brought coffee and he came in. He was like, I should have played some clips from him. He was unhinged. He really believed somebody who was on the TV for all those years that they had a First Amendment right to be there.
I know.
I was like, are you stupid? Why? Yes, why do people misunderstand the First Amendment? I don't want Don Lemon arrested because, you know, I don't know if you're at the scene of a spectacle. But
although, so during the show, Donald Trump gave a press conference and held up like how terrible the people they're arresting are, and like named them, showed them, shamed them. So, I mean, they are going to start fighting back.
Yeah, the FBI needs to make arrests on stuff like this. Matthew Cook, Walls a couple weeks ago, lamenting that ICE would start going into churches. Well, he got it half right, except it was Walls' brown shirts doing it. Such a good point. Walls said before Christmas, it was around the holiday season, that we're going to have ICE heading into churches.
Nope.
What about them? Valerie, these people are acting like the very thing they're against. They're so blind to it. The insanity is mind-blowing. Yeah, and it is. They are far closer to Gestapo than ICE.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Far closer. They're hunting random people on the streets who look conservative to them. If every Democrat can't condemn that, and if it was, can you imagine? I always use this example, but it's so obvious. If right-wingers were out there hunting down people with pink hair who they thought were liberal and assaulting them, can you even imagine? And you know what? Republicans would condemn it. There is really, I'm not saying Republicans are perfectly morally consistent all the time. I believe they've let Trump get away with things they never would have let Democrats get away with. You know, on January 6th, I've always said if it was BLM people who did the exact same thing, they would not be talking about political prisoners or whatever it is. But I do believe on the whole, they're far more consistent to their morality mm-hmm. than the left is. It's not even close.
Well, the lens they're seeing anything through is not necessarily, it doesn't feel as political as this lens of it doesn't matter who they're arresting.
Yeah.
We have to go with our base.
Right.
We have to go through that lens.
Well, look
and
at
so
how,
it doesn't matter that they're rapists, murderers, right. anything.
Look how harsh they were to Trump over the Epstein file thing. Mm-hmm. Like Republicans have been harsh to look how angry some of them got over Venezuela.
Right.
You know, and even over the bombing of the nuclear sites in Iran. So I see Republican base, especially the further right base, mm-hmm. challenge their party much more often. And this, yeah, it's just, it's insane. It's hypocrisy. Yeah. Lynn Blevins, they don't even want you to knock on daycare doors, but going into a church to interrupt a worship. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. On the masking bill, LaPickett says the biggest gripe is masks. Seriously? Big Princess.
Gotta turn it somehow.
Yeah, Nick Brown is absolutely not a serious person. I'm giving you the permission. Well, look, you do what you want to do. But for the sake of not giving the Seattle Times clicks, this one time, you should go look at the pictures that they posted of Nick Brown in this profile piece
today. I mean, it's a photo shoot.
They did a photo shoot with Nick Brown,
maybe multiple days, because there is him at the farmer's market with his kid, then he's in the office, then he's at a
campaign event,
and just at the desks of his employees, like, and then there's weird things going on. So they like stage these
photos. It's all
photos.
Staged where he's like holding court and laughing with the police. It is so weird. It's
bizarre.
It looks like Chinese propaganda.
Yeah,
it looks like state-run media propaganda.
North Korea.
Oh, where they're like, all standing around like, ah.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Go look at it. Okay, on the whistle kits, Big Princess. Who paid for all these? Yeah, I don't know. Female KC Royals fan. None of these people that are pro unlimited immigration would be willing to take 30 immigrants into their houses, feed them, clothe them, take them to their court dates. 100%. They're not taking immigrants into their house. Shannon, I tell our kids, look, if they're here illegally, they get arrested, period. Follow the laws of our country.
Yeah. Do you mean, yeah. Obey the law.
Right.
Don't get arrested.
Right. They're getting arrested because they're here illegally, not because Trump is evil. On the bill that would protect against fraud, a slow nomo says, heaven forbid we might uncover fraud. But you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You see it instantly based on how a politician responds, why they're responding that way.
Yep.
We knew the reason when Bob Ferguson told me I was obsessed with trans kids. Just mm-hmm. didn't want to go on the record, so we made it about me.
Mm-hmm.
The second they were lashing out at the reporters for knocking out, we knew it was because they were very concerned that there'd be widespread fraud
yep.
on their watch.
Oh, they know there is.
Oh, 100. Well, and
they're not concerned.
Right.
They know there is.
Weiss Castle. Impossible to audit means a guarantee of fraud.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to agree. Jeremy. All taxpayer money should be accountable and transparent, and that should not be controversial. On the governor and this poll claiming Republicans support a millionaire's tax, which I have not spoken to one. Just like Ari Hoffman said, I don't know one person I've spoken to that supports a millionaire's tax. Rick Johnson, everything Bob and the Dems propose is a bait and switch every single time.
I've never talked to a Republican that takes a poll. Tell us if you take polls. Yeah.
I'll sometimes do it just to see. I want to see what they're gauging public opinion on, because you'll always get them delivered to your phone.
We do that.
Right. And I'm like, what are they gauging? I guess as for the show, right?
Right.
And then I'll take screenshots as
yes.
I go. And I'll usually pretend to be like a, because it'll ask you all this information. Black, you know, I'll be like a black middle class gay, whatever.
See,
it is,
if a Republican takes a yes. poll, it's messing with the poll.
That's true. That's
totally
true.
So I never believe these polls, because I'm like, I don't know anybody that would take that.
Yeah. Son Miller with a nice super chat, $20 for my lucky fund. I appreciate that. I'll get her a nice little treat with it. I know. I'm being very dramatic. People's dogs go through surgeries all the time, and I've now made it a multi-day
child
topic on the show. But it did take quite a bit out of us over the weekend because she's extra stubborn. She's got a little bit of German Shepherd in her, and she knows I'm easy. I'm an easy target. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she made me instantly because I'll make eye contact with her, and she's in her kind of cage thing. And the second I do, she's like, oh, oh, I should play a video. I've got, oh. And she doesn't do it to Mike because she knows Mike's not going to take the bait. And I'll go and I'll be like, I'm sorry. And I'll go and pet her and give her snacks. Okay? And now she knows I'm a softie. She's just total softie.
Not the
alpha. Right. Pretty crazy sanity check. The fact that The View hasn't been taken off the air is just a shocker to me. It is so shocking to me by any sort of, and I get it, it's not a journalism show, but the amount of things that are just blatantly untrue that are said on The View and not fact-checked is wild to me. We'll get to that in our closing sanity check. First, we hear a ton of great stories about Firstmark Insurance, our wonderful show sponsors. Debbie says Firstmark is absolutely the best. We're 70 years old and would rather gouge out our eyes than shop insurance companies for all our cars, our boat, our house, our ATVs, etc. One-stop shopping with Firstmark, excellent rates and coverage. Any time we've had a question or had to make a change, it was addressed and dealt with immediately. So comforting having them in our corner. Highly recommend. And I agree. There's a reason I am personally a member of the Firstmark family, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the fact that they advertise on our show. I mean, they advertised with Dory for years, and so that's the reason I started trusting Firstmark. And when they came on board with us, I really got a sense of just how fantastic their service is because we use them for the business as well. And it's so nice getting just email check-ins from them to see how things are going, to see, you know, whether we have any changes coming up, and everything's so proactive, it just takes a lot off your plate. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, so actress Pam Grier was on The View, and of course, they were doing the regular race baiting that they always do, and she talked about what it was like growing up in Columbus, Ohio, in the fact that her mom had to shield her from some pretty scary stuff. Here's the clip.
You faced a lot of racism mm-hmm. Growing up mm-hmm. in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. How did that shape you?
Whew. Well... The military wouldn't allow black families to live on the base, so you had to live in an apartment. And you couldn't take a bus. You didn't, couldn't afford a car. You walked. Your dads walked to the base. Mm-hmm. And whew, sometimes we would go from, tree shade to get back to the apartment. My brother and I, my mom, with bags. And my mom would go, don't look, don't look, don't look. And she'd pull us away. Wow. Because there was someone hanging from a tree. And they have a memorial for it now where you can see where people were and left. Mm-hmm. And it triggers me today to see that a voice can be silenced. Mm-hmm. And if a white family supported a black, they're going to get burned down or killed or lynched as well.
Yeah. Interesting. As the internet pointed out, Pam Grier was born in 1949. The last verifiable lynching in the state of Ohio, 1932. So impossible for her to have seen publicly a lynching in Ohio. And of course, The View won't call that out. They won't correct it. They won't say anything because that doesn't fit the narrative that they're trying to push. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you'd like to support our show, you can do that for just $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Like, what is even the point of Pam Grier saying that? Look, in the 50s, there was still racism happening. Give any example that's realistic. Ton of examples probably from the 50s or the 60s that she could pick. Nope, I've got to completely manufacture something. Wild. We'll see. I guess we'll see if The View calls it out, corrects the record. I don't know. Will they? Probably not. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.